Thank you for listening to The Walt Weekly with your host, Walter Latham Sr., and co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. You can find us at www.thewaltweekly.com. On social media, Instagram, The Walt Weekly, Facebook, The Walt Weekly Podcast, Twitter, Walt Weekly, and Podbean, The Walt Weekly. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and other streaming platforms. Please like, follow, and share The Walt Weekly.
Hello, all, and thank you for joining another episode of The Walt Weekly Live Friday. And I am your host, Walter Latham, along with your co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. And first off, I want to wish all women happy Women's History Month. Women's International Day is on March 8th, and that's Monday, and I wish you a good one. Today's episode is Striving Black-Owned Businesses and Entrepreneurs During and After COVID-19. So we want to discuss that. And with that said, I'm going to move it over to Michelle. And how you doing, sis?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you, brother. How you feeling?
That shot after effect, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, all that's right? A good thing.
And you,
that's a good thing.
Yep.
We'll see about me taking that shot. So anyway, good evening, fellas. Good evening, audience. Thank you. And welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live, sponsored by Beauty Blends by Ami, Soap and Love, and Michelle Sweeney Hair. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. Thank you all for joining today's panel. We have Gregory Coleman out of North Carolina, CEO of Illumina. I'm supposed to correct that, right, Greg? I forgot to edit that out. So anyway, Illumination and Media and Technology, and engineer at the Walt Weekly. We also have Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps, combat veteran, senior consultant at B. Ernest Leadership and professional consultant. We also have Stephen A. Smith out of Atlanta, Georgia, educator, second chance business funding, and credit specialist. I will post everyone's social media and websites in the chat room. Welcome to the Walt Weekly, everyone. How's everybody doing? I was about to say you're taking a little nap there.
Yeah, as usual. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I was about to move on, buddy.
You're moving. All right.
So right now, today's topic is Striving Black Businesses and Entrepreneurs During and After COVID. We could start with the questions, Walter.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. I want to go to our esteemed panel now, and there's no order, but if you're ready, then you guys can start to answer the question. Anyways, right, did COVID have a catastrophic impact on Black-owned businesses, as if we didn't have a problem prior to COVID? Do you think it made it worse? Or did it make it better with the technology that we have in place now?
Well, I'll start first since I'm an entrepreneur. It did at first, but as an entrepreneur, I look for things to make myself better. When we first started the podcast, Friday Lives, a lot of businesses were down, out. I believe what got everybody back on their feet, it took a while, the SBA government loans, a lot of people took advantage of it because at one point, Black-owned businesses weren't able to get them. So due to the pandemic, they were just giving money away, as long as you had your paperwork right. So I know for a fact, a lot of colleagues of mine in the industry and outside of the industry are definitely striving. We are doing a lot better. I believe Black Wall Street is on the rise.
So they're thriving out there now. So you don't see anything negative,
Nothing negative. Everybody's advancing. They're taking advantage of improving their businesses. And we spoke about it before last year during COVID. We had so much downtime. And, what I said was, what am I going to say that I've accomplished during COVID, all of that downtime. So I took advantage of it as well. You know, I built my private studio salon because I was working, and it did impact me being an independent contractor working for other people. It definitely impacted my pockets. So I had, you know, I took advantage of it and I made myself better. I grew more and I'm growing.
Well, they always say if you force someone in the corner, you know.
Yeah, put your back against the wall.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And I see that now across the spectrum, right. You know, especially with, what do you call those, the gig economy, the gig mm-hmm. worker. And I see it with entrepreneurs such as yourself. So, you're right. You're absolutely right. Greg, you're an entrepreneur. You've been one for a while. So, you know, mm-hmm. I look up to you, Greg. So let me hear it from you.
It should be the other way around. I'm looking.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
To y'all.
Yeah, good.
I think a business like mine was affected initially, but I think, you know, we had to, you know, make some adjustments and go, you know, with what works as any, you know, business owner is going to have to do. You got to reevaluate, you know, where you're at and make adjustments. But, you know, I can also see that there are businesses out there that are still, you know, suffering during the pandemic, I think. You know, it all depends on, you know, what your service is, what you're doing, your level of adaptability, because the industry changes. Everything has changed.
Right. I mean,
so there's a paradigm shift during this on how to do business. And, you know, just like anything else, it's all a matter of your level of adjustment and whether this new economy even allows you to adjust. So I think from sector to sector, that's definitely changed.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of mom and pop stores, you know, got affected. They got hit the hardest, you know, those local store businesses. A lot of businesses that were doing online shipping because of COVID, their products were coming from overseas, China. So their distribution was really affected, really, really bad. So that taught them a lesson to order products in advance. I know someone that opened up a warehouse, you know, she did the SBA loan and she took that as a lesson. She lost, you know, thousands of dollars not being able to ship her product out. So it, you know, everybody, I'm hoping everybody just learned lessons from it and learned to move forward with what to expect if it happens again and just take advantage of things being able to be shipped out now. And, you know, like I said, she ordered a warehouse to make sure she's fully stocked. So if this happens again, she's good for quite a long time, you know, but that's just one person.
I'm going to give you one example. Go ahead, Ernest.
I was about to say that I think this is a great opportunity to, you know, for small businesses to also be more cognizant of domestic and foreign policies that are created. Because when we're creating those shirts and getting those products and they were coming from China or Thailand or Taiwan or, you know, wherever you were doing business at, then all of a sudden government changes the way that we do business and realize how much it actually affects you. So to be on the proactive side versus the reactive side of things now. So in addition to the things we're learning about our business, we need to learn about our business.
Right.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, one thing I learned in grad school, and I've always been this way, is that, you know, when you get your news, you just don't look at it from a micro point of view. You look at it from a macro, meaning you want to know your local news, you want to know your national news, you want to know your international news, because they all come into play if you're a business person. Okay? They all come into play. And that's one thing when I was down in North Carolina, that, you know, there was not much international news down in NC. You know, it was mostly local and some national, but it was mostly local.
Right.
Do you find that to be true, Steve?
think about some of the things that are happening pre and post COVID, and in the interim, you're thinking about what's really affected mine and is affecting so many of the other people is that, you know, let's just go to something like the barbershop or the beauty salon. You got right. people that walk into a beauty salon and they, that is a facility for so much interpersonal, so much person-to-person business. Same with the barbershop going up. I mean, I can't tell you how many customers I've engaged as a result of just being in that environment. And, you know, that's been shot to some extent. Even going to get a haircut right now is done by appointment. It's not yeah. done where, you know, people are hanging out and conversating and congregating. It's a different thing. And, you know, so many of the small businesses have suffered because we can't get out and engage people the way that we typically do. Right. Whether it's female or male, in my case, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, we're trying to adjust. The virtual deal is okay. Mm-hmm. It's great as a secondary option, but it's right. it the primary option will never, ever, ever be replaced.
I see. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying that the old-fashioned brick and mortar is not going away. That will definitely come back.
Not in sales, and not in promoting your product, not in the normal engaging people. It's, you know, there's something that is time tested and will never ever go away, and that's the eye to eye, face to face. You know, you're talking to people. People will close a laptop screen, mm-hmm. they'll close a computer screen on you. I mean, believe me, I've had it done many times. It's quite rude. You know, there's a different thing. They have to engage you if you're in front of them, you know, and either tell you, to get out of my face or they'll sit there and listen until you presented your pitch or your product or whatever it is, man.
But you know, I've been reading about a lot of these big I would say big box companies such as Best Buy and those in that space. They're closing a lot of stores. I mean, they're closing them now, even though COVID, you know, we can see some light at the end of the tunnel, but they're going to close them anyway because, I mean, there's been a paradigm shift, you know, mm-hmm. as Greg indicated. A lot of people prefer to just, you know, order online. Online is basically taking over. I mean, when it comes to, you know, your neighborhood grocery store, I think that may survive. I mean, that may survive, but you know, where you go into stores and you shop for, you know, an iPad, a computer, I think a lot of that is going to go away because companies see a positive to the bottom line, all right, in terms of space, not renting, you know, and it's saving all of that money.
Right, they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, working from home, right. You know, you have to see that, you know, even for me, I've worked independently going into people's homes as an independent contracted hairstylist, working with agencies, New York Fashion Week, expos, you know, all of that was physical work. I had to be there. So it definitely impacted my pocket because I was traveling, I was doing educational classes, you know, so I had to figure it out, you know, and it was scary because even before COVID, I wasn't comfortable with going to people's homes because people, you can't tell people how to act or what to do in their own homes, you know, so I was always sanitizing, always, you know, funny about being in people's homes anyway and being very careful. So that just made me come up with the idea of just doing something on my own. And it would be something that would be profitable for me. I mean, I'm slow now because it's still COVID. I'm slow, but I came up with an idea of making my own product and it's starting to pan out for me. So I had to figure it out. You know, everybody had to figure it out. And I think, you know, even after COVID, you know, this is just a new norm for me. So I'm grateful that I was able to do that. I'm grateful, you know, for my situation, but everybody didn't have that same situation. A lot of people lost businesses because they either didn't get the SBA loan or, you know, even with a loan, you know, it only lasts but so long for them. And people still weren't patronizing these stores, you know, the barbershops and the salons. You know, you only have 8 hours to work, you know, and you might be able to do 4 people in that 8 hours. It's tough. It's not easy. I mean, if you're following protocol, you're only working 8 hours, you know, and you only have 4 clients within those 8 hours. You know, it depends on the client, what they're getting, but you're still losing. And on top of it, we had to do PPE. You know, I had to get plastic covers for my chairs, plastic covers for this, plastic covers for that. You know, everything sanitized after each client. You have to leave room for that. Like, it's just, it added a lot more. And unfortunately, we had to, you know, you have to increase your prices because of that. So a lot of times we're not working as much because, right, you know, they can go and get a wig and keep it moving. You know, the winter time was always slow, but being that the pandemic happened, a lot of people were at home looking at YouTube, learning how to do their own hair. So that was another, you know what I mean?
That's a hit for you.
Yeah.
Listen,
well,
you,
it's a big hit.
You make your adjustments. I've done 32 years of in-home sales. Mm-hmm. And like you said about the PPE loan, I got one of the loan, but I have not been able to get the unemployment. And I've tried 3 times and I didn't get it. Wow. And I just recently took a job as a chauffeur. I've never done anything like that before in my life.
Wow. You figured it out. I'm gonna do
what I have to do until people get ease all these restrictions safely.
Right. That's right.
One of my businesses is in the travel industry. Unfortunately, there's only so much adjusting an individual, you know, travel agent can make. The industry itself is shut down. So, you know, you can make a few adjustments for some local travel here and there, but you're really, that industry on a whole, there's absolutely nobody's traveling. So there's only so much you can do to fill in the gaps in that industry. Ingenuity you can have to come up with, other sources of income in that industry.
Income.
But
that's
like Steve just said, you know, sometimes you got to go outside your industry and
Hey, well, listen, I'll just say this. I've always opened doors for women. This is the first time I've ever opened doors for men.
I've always opened doors for women too. I understand. But Yeah, Ernest, can I just say this because it ties into something that happened to me?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, All right, back in the Great Depression of 2008, 2009, I think I mentioned this to you guys, but I lost my job. I was in financial services, so the banks got hit when Lehman Brothers declared bankruptcy over the weekend. I think it was the second weekend of September of 2008. All right. So you saw Lehman Brothers packing their boxes. We had about $1 billion of Lehman commercial paper in our investment portfolio. All right. And when they went bankrupt, I lost my job. The following year, my wife, a lot of bankers were out of work. Okay. The following year, 2009, my wife got a job at Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. And they were doing Social Security. You know how every year you renew your Social Security, you get Social Security insurance, and or if you're returning, if you're becoming eligible, you get a call. All right. So I went to a call center. All right. In 2009, and me and my wife both were making $15 an hour, and I never forget it. You know, and the agency that placed us there knew my background. They knew who I was because I was a vice president at the time in a major bank. So, you know, I'm a six-figure guy, you know what I'm saying? I went from six-figure to $15 an hour. So they did, the New York Times did an article on me as an example of what the recession, the Great Recession had on people such as myself, you know, especially Wall Street. I mean, y'all guys can look it up. Just put Walter Latham plus New York Times. You will see that article. And I was, you know, the guy questioned me. He said, what do you, what do you think about, you know, going from six figures to $15 an hour? And what are your plans? What are you doing in the interim? So I started a golf business, an online golf business, which was way ahead of its time. Okay, where you could send in a picture of your swing. I had a pro to analyze your swing and come back to you. But the mere fact that I was black and he was white, he didn't want to work for me. He didn't want to be a part of it. Okay, so, you know, that just goes to show you that you will do anything. $15 an hour in the call center, calling people in Alabama, Georgia. I wanted the South because I had a slight Southern accent. So I would call the person up and say, yes, this is Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. I understand that you're eligible for Social Security. And these are, and you had a script that you, and a script that you read from. But that's just like what you're saying, Steve. You do what you got to do. And that's what I did. I went from six figures to $15 an hour.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. We are hustlers. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have drove. I would have been a driver, see, if I had to. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a mortgage, which I couldn't afford to pay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fortunately, with the Obama reconstruction or whatever, I was able to refinance my house.
When my three daughters ask me for money, we do whatever the heck we got to do to make sure that I'm able to put that in their hand. That's it. So.
As long as it's legal, we good.
I'm proud of you, my friend.
You know, the same thing with my son with being in the music industry. I was shocked that he actually came to me 2 weeks ago to say, you know, mommy, how do I apply for, you know, working at the post office? And I'm like, ain't no damn way you're going to give up your dream to go working at the post office and get stuck and you're not suffering. Like, there's no reason for you. You don't have any bills. You know, he doesn't have any bills. Like, he was able to get the unemployment pandemic, you know, filing taxes, which I don't know why, you know, I guess, Steve, I'll talk to you outside of this. But we were both able to get the pandemic unemployment. It's not much, but it helps, you know. And I'm like, son, you don't have... You know, he was able to pay off his bills. He had, you know, two credit cards, paid it off. And I'm like, look, I don't know. You know, it's going to come. Things are going to come to you. Just be patient. I know you're eager to be out there and performing or you want to make money. It's not that serious right now. Just wait. Things will change for you. And it did. He actually had a gig this week with BET, a private gig with them. So I said, things will come. Don't get stuck in a 9-to-5, but you know, I call it the plantation because once you get started with it, it's hard to, you know, go back to what your dreams are, your goals are, and stuff like that. And you really don't have to, you don't have an apartment, you don't have bills, but other people do. You know, what do they do? How do you figure it out? It's not easy, you know, it's not an easy situation, but thank God, you know, most people are able to bounce back. So,
Yeah. You coming back, Steve? Oh, no,
I have no doubt about it. They, you know, they're gonna open up your schools here in a few weeks. You know, I don't know what the situation is in New York or you know wherever anybody else is at, but I know. I mean, you know, Kemp is still looking for favor. He's still looking for favor. He has been dogged out. Shot down, you know, but he's still, you know, the hold that guy has still has on that party is ridiculous.
And who's that? Wow. Governor Kemp?
Governor Kemp. Yeah, and they're going to open the schools in a few weeks. It's been announced. They're going to open it up. So, and I'll be able to, now, you know, the end of this school year is going to be piecemeal. It's going to be whatever, you know what I'm saying? Right, but, but all, you know, the beginning of August when everything opens back up from a normal level, they'll start the next wave. Because the bottom line is that with what I do, I mean, these kids are so far behind. They've never been as far behind. And they're far behind under regular circumstances. And they've never been as far behind as they are now. So it's just, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. So, you know, we'll bounce back. And until then, you know, you just, hey, listen, I go out and deal with everything with a smile on my face, man. So, you know.
I want to circle back to Ernest. Ernest, I apologize for cutting you off earlier, but please.
No, you're good. So the conversation is flowing the way that it needs to, right? So it's natural and it needs to be that way. But like for example, for now, I understand Michelle sharing your story about your son, but for audience that are listening, like I work a regular job,
right?
And I'm an entrepreneur. And right. And what I will say to people, especially for those, and especially in this times right now, if you don't have a network or a village to being able to help you independently pursue your dreams, there's nothing wrong with having a job, right, so long as you keep the focus on what it is you ultimately want to do. So if you're able to generate that revenue, please continue to do so. However, also for all the entrepreneurs, whether you're working a job and an entrepreneur or you're a full-time entrepreneur, the way that we do business is completely going to change. The optimism of being able to reopen is one thing,
right,
but the science with the number of variants and mutations, the hesitancy when it comes down to vaccinations, the lack of questions, the individuals who are reducing the restrictions too early, may wind up, you know, thwarting the actual effort of actually being able to safely reopen, because that we may wind up having an additional surge, which will further complicate things.
Go ahead. No, I'm agreeing because I feel the same way. I think they're rushing it. And, you know, because there's an issue with people getting the vaccine, you know, hard to get an appointment, and people that don't want the vaccine, and, you know, Texas in particular, they want to like stop wearing masks. You know,
I can't breathe.
I can't breathe, but you can wear a damn white hood, you KKK.
Yeah. Like, Mississippi too.
Yeah.
Also.
You can wear your hoods, but you can't wear a damn mask. So you have the issue with people not wearing the mask. So I feel that, you know, if they open up too soon, like New York with the teachers stuff, the teachers are fighting it. You know, they're going with the union, going back into the classroom because they feel like, you know, we're not ready. Lyle's job when the pandemic first happened, he's working from home. They figured it out. His job told him, and they knew from day one, they already know what's going on. It's going to be shut down for 2 years. So I don't understand why they're even rushing to go back, because one, a lot of corporate America in particular, they figured it out. They're saving a lot of damn money from paying office, you know, air conditioning all day, paying for rent in a building, you know, with corporate America. They are saving tons of money. And guess what? We're working from home and our freaking bills are going up.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah, there's people that are definitely making money right now because, yeah, my heating bill or gas bill, light bill, everything is a whole lot more.
I'm telling you, because you're at home, you're using more. So I really feel that, you know, that they're rushing it. I think it's gonna be another surge. It's definitely gonna be another surge. That's just the way.
What you're saying is that my shot won't mean anything.
It doesn't now. What the hell does it mean? It's only gonna it's like a flu shot. You're not gonna not get it. You just have less symptoms, right?
And less risk.
And it's only good for what, 6 months, and you got to get it again.
Like, they don't even know.
They don't even know.
Right. Yeah.
Right. The biggest thing with these shots right now is the fact that there's less hospitalizations and there's less chances of death. That is what they're that's what they're banking on. Yeah, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is absolutely huge.
Definitely,
of course. You know? USA, I'll take that.
Yeah, yeah, right. Definitely. I take just take the blue. I take that. Yeah. But I mean, okay, but to go back, to get back on track here, okay, I think we're getting off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about, you know, before COVID? How was Black businesses and entrepreneurship prior to COVID?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about too. So we have to realize that a lot of businesses fail anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're Black businesses, white businesses, entrepreneurship, a lot of people don't make it to the first 5 years
in
their businesses. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about less than 50% of businesses make it to their fifth year, 33% of startup businesses only make it to the 10-year mark.
Right.
You're talking about even businesses that – so it's a known fact that businesses fail. The only thing that happened during COVID is that it exacerbated the symptoms of the failure. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have poor partnerships, when you don't know what the rules are, how to pay your taxes, how to, you know, you got a bad deal. I mean, you got a bad deal on the shop that you own. I mean, there's a lot of beauticians and barbers and or people who own, storefront property that get bad deals. So you paying out the wazoo for your rent, and you can't make any money in the store.
Right,
and then you can't get out of your lease because you done signed it for 2 or 3 years, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, and think about how many businesses that started last year in 2020.
Yeah,
and their grand opening on March 15th.
Yeah. I know a few. We had somebody like that last year. Walter, remember the girls that came in? The hairstylist. One of them had literally opened up her salon in November, and boom, she shut down in March. You know, it was tough. And then on top of it, not that you're signing these leases, the landlords aren't working with people because the banks are not working with them. So
Right. That's what you need to look at.
It's a tough situation on both ends of it. He's like, you know, why should I can't afford to keep you here because I have to pay my mortgage. You know, it's just a tough scenario.
Yeah.
Right. And so and that goes into, I mean, and granted, I'm not trying to deviate the conversation, but again, it goes back into, you know, really being able to strengthen the village and how valuable is the Black dollar if it's going to white banks? How good is the Black dollar if you're going to white co-ops or other ethnic co-ops that actually own the building itself?
Right.
You know, because then how do you work with it within the community to being able to self-sustain yourself? When we talk about a Black Wall Street and what was able to sustain them is that all of those businesses complemented one another.
Mm-hmm.
If the Black doctor in the neighborhood, you know, got free roofing from the from the carpenter, and the carpenter got free cement from the masonry from the mason, and so it was all of those things. The beautician, you know, saying she did everyone's hair, and then someone else cooked all the food, and someone else planted the
bartering system. Yes,
it was a barter.
So. Well, we don't have that system. One, we have a lot of distrust amongst one another. We don't have the resources. So again, when Michelle, when you're talking about like what did we accomplish in COVID in 2020? Hopefully, it was to actually get smarter about how to actually do business, being able to promote, you know, and understand policy, understand resources, and not just having resources, but how do you become resourceful?
Right.
Because there's a lot of people who have the stuff, but you don't know how to use it. And that's like me putting somebody who has never served in the military, putting you in front of an M16 and telling you to put it together and then go down range and actually being able to shoot. I gave you all the tools and I told you what to do, but you don't know how to do
it. But you don't know how to do it. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to learn how to use the
educate
tools and the things that we have. Absolutely.
Yes. But and that's another thing that I did all 2020, you know, a lot of stylists that I follow that I idolize, you know, they had to figure it out. I'm a teacher. They were teachers, but we had to, you know, learn and educate ourselves all the time. And one thing I can say that I jumped on and I did share with other people, whether they utilize it or not. There was so much free education during 2020. I couldn't keep up with it. And free. Mm-hmm. Classes that they were charging $3,000 for. And I was like, you know what? One guy, you know, he dropped his first. He was like, oh, I can't, you know, do this for free. I'm going to do it for $20. I didn't give a damn because I couldn't afford his classes before COVID. I paid that $20. And guess what? I continue to take classes every Monday and Tuesday, and they're still free. So education is free. Yes, dear Mandy, that's right. And, you know, if, like I said, if, you know, I shared the information, whether they utilize it or not, you know, when I'm ready to open up, I'm going to be a badass. So
that's all right. This is going to say that knowledge, there's a sort of term that knowledge is power, right?
Yes, that's right. That's
applied
right.
knowledge, applied right. knowledge is that's power. Right. It makes that's no right. sense of you knowing something mm-hmm. and not doing
and don't apply it.
Right. So what you're going to do, that's what's going to make you the badass. That's what's going to make you dynamic. And hopefully everyone who's listening to this show will actually be able to apply the things that you're learning, the things that you're hearing from exactly. this panel, from the Walt Weekly each week. You know, as we take on some of these different issues that are happening around, hopefully the value is not just listening to it and be like, yes, queen or king or this, that, and the third. Don't be the yes queen. And not do the thing or whatever it is that you're doing.
Right, right. That's right. And also, you know, sharing with the community as well. You know, it's not you know, I'm not selfish like that. You know, I see a lot of people that do things and they're not going to tell you. I'm like, what's the big deal? I'm not I'm not competing against you. I'm not in the same area. You don't have to. I'm not a threat to you. What's the big deal? Me, I don't give a damn. I'll post it. I'll share it. You utilize it the way you want to. But I know what I'm going to do with it. So,
You know, what I think really, what irks me, what makes me feel bad, I get a lack of sleep from hearing about it, is, you know, internet connectivity. In the Black community, we have, it's bad. It's very bad in some areas of the Black community. I mean, now, you know, I'm fortunate because, you know, I got high speed internet and this, but there is a substantial amount, especially when it comes to our school kids that have to do remote, that they don't have that type of access, especially when the schools are closed. So in a way, it's good when the schools do open back up. They lost a year. You got to look at it like this. You know, a lot of our kids have lost 1 year of education. It's just like if they were in the third grade, when they go back, they should be in the third grade. You know what I mean?
So, do you know, Walt, that for the first time in over 70 years, there are no standardized tests? There's none.
No, I believe it.
There's no ACT. Wow. There's no SAT. There's nothing.
Well, how can they? Yeah.
I can't. There's nothing.
It's not an equal playing field. It's unlevel.
The fact is that it's just based upon the grades that you had prior to the pandemic. That's what these colleges, these institutions of higher learning are basing their acceptances on is what you were pre-pandemic.
They just want to push you through. Now, don't forget. Now, a lot of these schools, they just want to get rid. You know, okay, let the teacher in the fifth grade worry about this fourth grader. You know, I'm done. All right, bring me in somebody new, and it's shameful. It's shameful. There should be a solution for those. I mean, I know it's been being addressed by Google and all these big companies. Yeah, we're gonna give you a iPad or whatever. But what good is an iPad if you don't have connectivity?
Well, but you also have to think of this. This whole thing. If everybody remembers, okay, there were whispers of it in late February, and it really started to take shape in March, and everything got shut down the last week of March, the first week of April. So we're coming up on 1 year, and this is not to blame any particular educator. but they still haven't figured it out. This is a year later, and they still don't have it together.
Yeah, the only way to, right. to address That's it right. is for them, for the kids to go back to school.
Yeah,
That's the only way to address it.
Yeah. It. I mean, in a way, yes, it's one way of being able to address it. I think that, I mean, one, I think, well, Walter, to your point, they were pushing kids out of in and out of school, out of classes, but well before COVID.
Oh, true.
I remember being in the eighth grade in South Carolina, and in eighth grade, you're right around 12, 13 years old, 13 years old. And there was two kids that was in my class that was 15 and 16.
Wow.
They should have been sophomores in high school, right? And then now, again, that was a long, long time ago.
Oh, but yeah.
Truth be told, kids now have lost nearly about 2 years. They say that you lose about a quarter to half a year over the summertime if you don't apply yourself, if you're not reading and everything else.
Right.
So a lot of the skills that you learned in the previous year, you actually lose out on. Well, they lost most of that because a lot of schools started closing down in March. Now, everything officially across the nation, yes, happened around April, May time frame, or whatever they were trying to do with school as much as they possibly could. However, many of them lost that. There was no summer school, right? So anybody who needed to make up work couldn't make their work up during the summertime. Right, they didn't do it. So then you come down in the fall, you try to start school, and then you botch that. You still haven't gotten the laptops, so they lose all of that. You go through the entire 2020. Here we are in 2021. I think Steve was in the talk. Still ain't got it right.
So, but Ernest, and piggyback on what you just said, but just also to take into consideration, think of all the bad habits that have been developed. Now you got to
That's right.
You know, you're going to have to rebuild the way that a young student, an older student thinks, and the way that they perform. I mean, if you think about, I mean, this is over a year right now of developing some of the worst habits that you can have academically, and now we got to put you back together.
You got to worry about the professional bad habits that have been formed.
Right, you're right.
Both sides.
Explain to me, what are those bad habits that professionals have? I mean, could you explain that, elaborate a little bit more?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing. So you don't have a commute anymore. So you don't no longer have to get up early in the morning to get ready. Your program, your lessons are all done online. So there's no class interactions. And public speaking, teaching, it's a perishable skill. So if you're not constantly doing some of these things at workplace, and those things perish. But again, the disciplines of planning, the disciplines of getting to work, the interactions with your colleagues, your peers, the collaboration, there's a lot of things. I mean, your professional dress. I mean, right. the kids are going to have theirs, but a lot of adults in their professional lives share the same things. And the only thing that's different between the kid and an adult is the responsibility and the age.
We're all creatures of habit. So I'm definitely with you on that. We're creatures of habit, man.
Okay. Okay. All right. I have something else I was thinking about is these influencers, the people that are online. All right. And it's an influx of minorities. I mean, forget about it. I mean, they're making money out there. They're very creative, hardworking, and they're using application development. They're doing a lot of different things that are new. All right. So they're being exposed to technology. So is there a silver lining to COVID for us going through this pandemic, for all these people dying? Did they die in vain? Is there a silver lining here?
I think there's a silver lining in the fact that we've all been humbled, first and foremost. I mean, you know, a lot of people include myself, took advantage. I mean, excuse me, took for granted all, you know, all the things that we have available to us. I mean, you know, I won't veer too far off, but I've been over to Africa. I've been over to Asia, and I've been in some places where there's no internet, where there's no computers, and where there's no, you know, things that we consider, you know, a normal, but to them it would be a luxury. And the fact is that, you know, they're not missing it the way that we're missing it. You know, they're not, because they never had it in the first place. So, you know, the pandemic has really illustrated, you know, what we have. We just can't take it for granted. You know, we have some things that, you know, that others don't have. And we have some restrictions. You know, one thing I will say, you know, United States is going, you know, 100% at it right now. And, you know, President Biden has said that by the end of May, you know, we're going to have all the adults and most young people vaccinated by the end of May. He's gone so aggressive. But I was listening to a panel of you know, health professionals. They said there's 130 countries that don't have a dose of vaccine in their country.
Wow, really?
Yeah. 130? No, I heard of it. I mean,
130 countries.
They're pushing, and they're, you know, they're trying to put some.
Right. And they want to open up. I mean, come on.
Well, no, the thing about it is that, okay, do you know some of these people that would like to come to America, or
yeah,
some of us that want to travel to these 130 right countries?
Exactly.
How's that gonna be done? I mean, you know, so yeah, you know, and you know, it is said that the United States is the richest country in the world. It's said over and over again. I've heard that basically my entire life and things of that nature. Yeah,
well, I didn't see none of that. I'd love to see the fruits of that labor.
We have access to so many things, look, you know, there's so many countries that have nothing. 130.
Yeah, countries. Yeah, yeah. True. But well, I mean, that doesn't withstand. You know, that doesn't change what I'm asking. I'm asking very, very direct here. Do you think there are any benefits from COVID-19 because of, let's take for example, Michelle, let's take for example, these influencers on Instagram. Let's take for example, these independent film producers that release to what they call web films.
I think we've all become more computer savvy. Can we agree on that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, you're forced to.
Yeah,
no choice. That's why.
I mean, you had no choice when you were working.
You
know, I mean,
you're gonna be a hermit. I mean, you'd be surprised how many people I do know that don't have computers and don't have internet.
And didn't want one. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I still, if y'all guys could answer my question on that. Right.
I hear what, you know, exactly what you're asking. I think there's a silver lining, and you talk about people in certain creative industries,
right?
And, you know, internet influencers. We are talking about such a small percentage of the population that will gain, you know, financially from that. You know, for the most part, you know, some folks might get better. A lot of folks might get better at, you know, going in the backyard and doing their own, you know, small YouTube videos and TikTok videos. But how many people are going to be able to monetize that it makes a considerable difference in, you know, what they bring home to their kids? Yes, the possibilities are there, but it's the same as anything else. Who's going to excel at it to the point where they see the financial gain from it?
Right. I was going to say, as far as influencers are concerned, they're actually losing money because people figured out how to do the things that they're doing right now. And then they just recently had something on TV in reference to influencers, and they're not real. Like, most of them weren't even real. Like, I get hit with influencers all the time now, especially now that I developed my oil. They're sending me messages. I'm getting all these crazy messages saying, oh, I could promote it for XYZ amount.
Yeah, I've seen those.
I don't need you to promote my product. I could promote it myself. I could, yeah, you know, I figured out the software that they use. I took Instagram classes, you know, I'm just not as aggressive as they are, but they are losing a ton of money, these influencers, because people figured it out.
Yeah, but there are influencers in other areas that don't necessarily call themselves influencers.
Right, right.
There are people that make a difference in society. You know, there's that, you know, initially during the pandemic, everybody was looking to folks to encourage them. And they were able to profit off of that encouragement. They were looking for people to teach them different skills. You know, whether they were, you know, they were actually, you can't say that they were fake, because they were really showing people how to change the way they do things. One of the things my wife has been doing a lot, you know, during the pandemic is, you know, she gets on a online cooking show every Wednesday. And let me tell you, this is real good food that she's making, that, you know, she's learning online. So that person that runs that is an influencer. I don't know to what extent, you know, that he's able to monetize that, but these are still influencers. But how many people that were suffering in one way or another, that, you know, their traditional means of income stopped, that they were able to turn around and become an influencer in another area, you know, and they monetized it. So, you know, that's one of the things that you got to look for. Yeah, there's a silver lining. Some people are creating new industries and getting creative. And, you know, I've seen some amazing things, amazing TV shows, movies that happened that people created during the pandemic. But the bulk of us, the masses of the people, how many of them are going to be able to transfer that into wealth? You know, and not just wealth, but sustainability.
Okay.
Right. Hey, Walter, Michelle. Hey, Walter, this is Gene.
Gene, hey, how are you doing? All right.
Awesome.
Hey, what's going on to all the brothers on the panel? You know, you guys are dropping it tonight, as always.
How's it going?
Thank you. What I wanted hey, what's going on, brother? What I wanted to introduce is that COVID-19 change the way that we campaign. You know, normally we do these, you know, candidates do these huge fundraisers with, you know, hundreds or at some point, you know, thousands of people, and everybody's writing checks and eating food and hugging and shaking hands. but because of COVID, we couldn't do that. You know, even the petitioning season was cut short by Governor Cuomo, because he didn't want people out there, you know, talking to other folks, not practicing social distancing and things of that nature. So what was born in 2019, absentee ballots were basically in its inception in New York State, but it really took hold in 2020 because people were forced to vote absentee, otherwise risk the fact of going to the polls and being exposed to COVID-19. And I'm telling you, I could tell you as an absolute fact, hand to God, on election night, June 23rd, I was in second place. I was down by 43 votes. And because of absentee, I registered almost 800 votes off of absentee balloting. And that was the boost I needed to push me to victory. So now, you know, voting and campaigning, you know, has changed. It has a new face. You know, don't expect long lines anymore because people can, you know, vote absentee from home. I just wanted to add that in. Thank you.
Gene, I want to let you know, they're trying to take it away down here in Georgia.
They are. They are working very hard to take that away. But I don't think so, not as long as the Democrats control Congress.
No, Stacey is so. On it. Stacey Abrams.
Yeah, but they are trying. But yeah, Gene, that's a great point, man. That is a great point. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
One of the questions, part of the question that you had asked is whether or not will everyone who died during COVID-19 have died in vain?
Anyway, right.
And as part of what, you know, what it would be, that silver lining. I think a part of that answer to that question is to really reflect on everyone who has died and sacrificed throughout our history within our community, and whether or not have we served them, and was their deaths in vain? So to Gene's point about the way that we vote, for everyone who died during the Civil Rights Movement and every voter rights, and to get the Voter Rights Act the way that it is, you know, did they die in vain? For all the first business owners, the first in the first Black business in, whether it was a Little Italy, whether it was into a normally white area establishment or whatever, did those individuals, did their efforts go in vain? Have we served our country, have we served our community best by being able to share information, to being able to tell everybody what our, you know, our peaks and valleys are, and how to being able to get it? Are we sharing wealth? Are we sharing knowledge? Are we applying knowledge? And so I think to your point, or to address the question, is I can't fully answer it unless we actually change the trajectory of how we do business and be consistent about it. Because we are very good to be able to bring up a poignant point such as that in an issue, and we'll do it for a little while, and then we'll fall off and we'll get comfortable again, and then we'll just protect our own stuff. And so then therefore your answer would be yes, there would be in vain, because we won't adhere to the things that we need to do every single day. I mean, all the individuals who don't get the opportunities to go through to lose a business, or to gain a business, or to learn something new, or to whatever, because they're not here anymore. And so is it fair for us to be able to continuously take, I mean, granted, we can acknowledge things that we took for granted, but is it fair for us to continue to take it for granted?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and so, how do we transition now moving forward? So again, you know, your the platforms you have is phenomenal. And I think the very natural formulation of our conversation, our different experiences, and being able to bring this together and hopefully kind of make it, you know, kind of break it down, we say in the Marine Corps, break it down Barney style for the masses of consumption. But again, apply the knowledge that everyone's going to get from it.
Exactly. And I agree with you. But then that's a segue into what I have next. And that is, do you think that the rate of creativity will go back to the way it used to be, to the 9-to-5 job? All right, do you understand what I'm saying? What I'm saying here, let me explain that. Let me try to unpack that a little bit more. Is right now you have a lot of people going online, creating apps. They're going on Instagram. They're going on these social media sites, but not just social media sites. They're creating businesses, B2Bs, business to business type work. All right. And then you have your gig workers and all this kind of stuff. All right. So when COVID, I don't know when, and maybe 2 years, like I heard earlier, when it's over, do you think that we will revert back to the 9-to-5, you know, because working for yourself is one of the hardest things you can do. You know, I started a few businesses in my life, and I tell you, it's the hardest thing you can do, because you're always thinking, you're always planning, you're always looking at strategy, tactics, and all this kind of stuff. Do you think, and I'm gonna address this to Michelle, do you think, Michelle, that once the pandemic is over and we get back to some type of normalcy, do you think you're going to see a pullback of people that have ventured out there now, all right, and to create? Do you see them pulling back when they can get a job and enjoy a paycheck? You see that pullback?
I don't think so. I think this is just something for us to look forward to, that is change for us, for people that have been wanting to stop their 9-to-5 corporate America, quote unquote, job that they hated. They really hated. And it, like I said before, it just put you back against the wall where you were forced to come up with something. And I know someone that was in corporate America. She came up with her own products and she's doing phenomenal. I doubt it if she goes back, if it's working for her and everything is male. People want the product. It depends on your product that you have, you know, because I'm a salon. Anybody can go to a salon and get their hair done. But each person is different. I specialize in certain things. I have, you know, my clients like me for whatever reasons they love me. And, you know, it's if you have the clientele, if you have the product that's going to serve the community and your clients, I think they will be successful. If you are a 9-to-5 or working in banking, you've been working at home, it's easy to go back. You know, you can't say, oh, I'm not going back to the office once it's all over. This is your job.
No, I'm talking about the people that have moved over to the technology, the technical.
If they moved over to the technology, I doubt it very much if they go back. I doubt it. Why would you if you're going to be successful now? I think they'll continue to be successful, especially with the marketing, the tools that they're using, you know, the creativity that they have. Why invest so much time and energy and money, because it costs money to do some of these things, into doing something that is just temporary? I doubt it. Like, if you're a black business, and Walter, I've been doing this since 9/11. You know, independent.
Yeah, I know you have. I know you have. Yes.
And I've always struggled to go back to Wall Street. I've always struggled that, and I've gotten depressed over it. I've caught anxiety attacks over it. Going back, you know, I have a different situation. I have my husband, but still, there were times that I wanted to go back to work and I said, no, you know, I refuse because I know I can do it. I can do it.
You know, the thing, okay, you know, today's March 5th and, you know, we just went through the shortest month of the year.
Yes,
but you know, those 28 days of February,
right.
on social media and through other outlets, I saw some of the absolutely amazing things that people that look like me have right. done and contributed to our society, mm-hmm. you know, as a whole. You know, not just African American society. We have invented, we have created, we have directed, right. we have done so many. You know, amazing things, and it's just beautiful that it's highlighted during the month of February, and
right.
it's a beautiful illustration for each and every one of us to view. So I just think that there are some of our kids, our nieces, our nephews, our cousins mm-hmm. That are becoming more and more creative as a result
right.
of what we're going through right now. So I think it's only going to showcase what, you know, who not only right. who we are as a people, but
definitely,
you know, just how
definitely.
Creative we are. Yeah.
And especially the fact that you can get it online, you know, people are being creative. I know a little girl that's a millionaire because her mother was a millionaire. And if you have a product that people love, I think they'll continue to be successful. That's how I feel after COVID.
All right. So you're saying that train has left the station, right?
Mm-hmm.
So okay. All right. Great.
Well, I think the issue is going to be whether or not is it going to be sustainable and sustainable to a sense of are people willing to continue to reinvent themselves?
Right.
Because that's what's hard about business. Like, nothing can mm-hmm. stay the same. Like, Nike didn't continue just to make one shoe.
No.
Ford didn't continue just to make one car.
Right.
You know, barbers can't just cut just one way. As a beauty,
right.
owning a salon, you can't just do just one
no.
thing. Like, you can do lashes.
Industry changes.
Yeah, industry changes. So, and people need you to do more.
And you have,
to
be willing to adapt to that change as well. You know, a lot of people. But the only
right.
thing about, I could say about the beauty industry is really not changing.
Uh-huh.
They just added something, their own twist to it, to this generation. It's basically the same styles.
Right.
Nobody's really being creative with it. It's
yeah.
the same stuff.
Yeah.
They're just giving it a different title.
Well,
so,
I just want to know, you know, because I haven't been to a mall in a long time. You know,
mm-hmm.
you walk through a Macy's, a Lord & Taylor, you walk through a Bloomingdale's, a Saks,
mm-hmm.
and you see women getting facials. Are women getting facials now?
I wouldn't know.
I haven't been to the mall.
You know,
I never even had a manicure, man. I haven't even had a manicure, so I wouldn't.
They're doing them, yeah. I mean, people are even getting acupuncture, stuff like that. You know, yeah. You have sanitation involved. I've seen people on doing live streams with doing facials and stuff, but you know, they're completely masked up. You know, the person all that's right. getting the service all isn't. So you're still really taking a chance. It's just like makeup artists. When, you know, I've been on set, I've had recent photo shoots, and the client can't wear a mask. Everybody else is masked up. So, you know, Fashion Week, same thing. You know, they had Fashion Week. It was limited. But, you know, obviously the models can't have masks on. So you're taking a chance with it. But they are doing these things. Yeah.
You just made me think when you were just talking. I mean, I'm just sitting there saying to myself, I said, I wonder, you know, because that's just – something that you always see. I just didn't even know if that was even being done now.
I like that term, reinvent yourself. I'll give you an example. Last week I had to take my car in for servicing. All right. So I get a loaner car. All right. So I had my wife, she agreed, you know, to take it to the dealer and this and that. But I took it back. When they called me and said, oh, your car's ready, Mr. Latham, please. Okay. So I go. And I get in the car, my wife and I, and I go to push the button, start the car. And there was no sound. There was nothing. I'm saying, dadgum, what's going on, man? I look at the gas gauge, what I thought was a gas gauge. Then I see this little message that said, you know, charge immediately. So I'm thinking it's a hybrid, okay? You know that it was a totally electric car?
Oh, wow.
I had to play around with it. Then I decided just to put it in gear, back up a little bit. Then I put it in drive and go. And then I said, oh, this is an electric car. No sound. Wow. No sound. Wow. So I had to reinvent my driving, right? How I start the car. But anyway, just an example. But you do have to. You have to be, you have to be adaptable, as I've always said. Yeah. Oh, that was really cool.
Hey, Walter, this is Gene.
Yeah, Gene.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether people in our society are, you know, have the acumen or the determination to reinvent themselves. But one thing is for damn sure, the employers do, because I saw a news report on television that the Postmaster General, right, the one that was under fire last year.
He's the one that, slow mail.
Yeah, right. And he removed mailboxes. He's offering early retirement to all non-union workers because he wants to shrink the amount of employees with the United States Postal Services. So if you've been a mail carrier all of your adult life and that's all you know, and then somebody tells you either retire or we're going to fire your ass, you're going to have to find a way to reinvent yourself. So basically, to answer your question, in my opinion, Walter, people have to reinvent themselves, otherwise suffer the consequences. That's and right. I'm going back on mute.
Thank you, Gene. I really appreciate that. I mean, you really make a point. And I made this point to my kids in another way. I think it's synonymous with what we're saying, is that if you don't adjust, you don't survive. Man, that's basically what that boils down to. At its lowest level.
Sink or swim.
I think Gene makes some good points. We gotta ask ourselves a big question. During this pandemic, you know, in order to keep things going, you know, like they are, in order for this to sustain the creativity and things of that nature, have we built people enough? Because that's really what it comes down to. It could be innovation in different industries, but have we built the people enough to keep them hungry? Now, we talk about what some go-getters do, but what about the masses? Are the masses ready to be innovative and shut the door and leave the 9-to-5 behind? Or how many folks are going to be more than happy to go back to the security and the safety of that 9-to-5 job and to have that, what was, you know, some people see as a guaranteed paycheck? I mean, I know a lot of us say that we're going to, you know, I don't need the boss and this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, because that's how I feel. But
I can tell you this.
A lot of folks that you know, are going to go back and take that job and be cool with it because there's a sense of security. And,
right, and, of course. You know,
everybody
and
wants
you got
to get
your, your 401k.
Yeah.
And they know you need a job. They know your personal life. You got a mortgage. You got 100 kids. They ain't going. They're like, oh, they're not.
How many people can't wait to go back to the good old days?
Right.
And you know, since you know, for the last year, everything's been topsy turvy. They want to get back to what was normal. And you know, it takes the ingenious and the people with, you know, with that get up and go and push and the creativity. And yeah, there's a lot of us out there. But those are the only people that don't care. There's never going to be any more normal. But there's a lot of people that are not built up to the point that they're going to, you know, they're going to move forward into what's new and what's strange. They're going to, you know, stick to what was safe and what was old.
I agree. But, right, I agree. You know, if you're a change agent, and I've been in situations, you know, wherein you're putting in a new system and you got people that have been on that particular job or that function for 20 years, and they're used to doing a certain thing. Every day they walk in, boom, 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 okay, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and boom, I'm, you know. All right, so when you put in a new system, you know, you have to go to the end user, and I call them end users, and you tell them, say, okay, this new system is going to do this, going to make your life better. What you used to take before, it used to take an hour, 2 hours to do, you can do it in 15 minutes. Oh, Lord. I mean, they would cry. They, not literally cry, but they would be arguing. Why do we have to have this? Why? But that goes to show you that, you know, being a change, an agent of change, you got change. You got people that resist change. They don't want things to change. Just like you said, they don't want things to change.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's the majority of people. They'd like to like it like it is.
I got another question, though, for you, Walt. Should we shame the folks that don't want to change? That want to, if you were doing a job for 20, 25 years, you want to go back to, and you're great at it. Some folks want to go back to what they were great at. They don't want to now learn something new. So should we, do they deserve our shame or do they deserve our support?
I think support. They deserve education. They deserve education in the sense that they have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
They have to learn that change is inevitable. Nothing remains the same. Nothing
remains the same. Greg, I can give you a perfect example. Remember when we were at Citibank, right? We started municipal bonds. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those people stayed. I mean, you left, I left, you know, a couple other people had left, but, you know, I'm still in touch with these people. You're talking 30 years. Mm-hmm. And they stayed in the same position. They were like, oh, you're always so lucky with a job. What the hell does luck have to do with it? I went, I took the classes. You know, the company offered you, Walter, you know that. They offered you classes, go back to school, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I took advantage of everything, every opportunity they had for growth for myself until I couldn't grow anymore. And then I left. So most people do not like change. They like staying. They have that mentality that their parents had, stay in a job for 30, 40 years, retire, get your pension. That shit don't exist anymore. There's no such thing as longevity.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Shell, is, you know, before the pandemic, we had a certain percentage of people that, you know, that were the go-getters, that get out, you know, mm-hmm. the innovative, the changers, like Walt was saying, the change agents. Now, after COVID, has that percentage of people that were like that necessarily changed? You still had a certain amount of people before COVID.
I think it's more now.
Willing. Yeah. But is it enough to shake the scale of people? You know, a lot of people, like I said, can't wait to do what they're doing.
Right.
Well, first off, if you're not speaking, please go on mute because I am getting a little feedback. But I you know, to your point, and that was Greg, right? That was speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Yep. I get you and Steve mixed up. Y'all got similar accents, which I should know now. You know, but the thing is that, you know, people that resist change, they lose their jobs eventually, because a lot of times when you're trying to implement change, you want these people to learn new things so that way they can continue to contribute. All right. If they don't, then they get laid off, and then they will never make the amount of money that they made while they were in that particular position. All right. So we have to tell people that when it comes time to make a change, adapt to the change, learn the change. If your procedures change, you learn those changes and you implement those changes. Otherwise, you're going to lose your job. That's just the way life is. I mean, that's corporate. You know, and I can speak to corporate America all day.
Corporate bullshit. Yes.
Right? But the good news is, I was reading a study that 30% of black graduates that graduate college, 30% they walk away with that bachelor's. Mm-hmm. They're not going to corporate America.
No.
They're going into their own businesses.
Right.
30%. Now, that, to me, that's a big number. All right. And number can only grow. That number can only grow. And it, I mean, it's so many of them that certain large companies, you know, they need that input from diverse, from being diverse. So if they lose these points of views or these viewpoints from a diverse group, it hurts them. It hurts their bottom line. Mm-hmm. Because they need these people. I'm so happy. I'm very happy. I hope that trend just grows and grows and grows, mm-hmm. and continues. So Ernest, what do you have to say? You have anything to say about that? Have you heard the same thing?
No, Ernest? Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I hadn't heard of that particular study. I'm just curious as to see how it will actually play out. I'm with Greg. I think there's a number of people who have it in them. Again, the statistics, you know, yearly have shown that a lot of businesses tend not to make it. Don't make it to the 5 years. Don't make it to the 10 years. A lot of people tend to stay in the same type of situation. And the thing is, at the end of the day, you know, we break it down back to Lion King. It is the circle of life. I mean, we need people mm-hmm. to do all of these jobs. Exactly. I mean, we still need people to cook the food at McDonald's and Chick-fil-A, and we need sanitation workers, and we need people to wash the dishes at our favorite, you know, 5-star restaurants, and we need valets, and we need concierge. And so at the end of the day, yeah, it may sound good, you know, and to start your own business and everything, but we need people to do it. And here's the thing. If your business becomes a large business, then you still need employees.
Right.
There you go.
So you right. So it's one of those things that, yeah, we need everybody to be the greatest in their particular skill sets. I don't think anyone should be shamed. I think the question was, you know, should they be shamed? No, I don't think no one should be shamed about going to work, doing their 9-to-5, because that may not just be their interest. And you got a lot of people out here trying to fake it, trying to do something that's not them.
I agree. Mm-hmm. But I'm not
it's
saying
a win-win for anybody. You know, if you're independently working as an entrepreneur, or if you're in a 9-to-5, you know, because whatever your career is, somebody has to, you know, there's someone there. Like I have to ship my product out, so you have to, I have to deal with the United States Postal Service. So there's always going to be work for everybody. It's millions and millions of people here. Like, it's not like people will be out of work if they become a entrepreneur. They have to feed into someone. Like, we're entrepreneurs, but we still need other people's services. So people will still be working, but the people that were working in corporate America figured it out. We figured out another way. So I just feel like because I'm an entrepreneur, I've been in a position where I felt like I needed to go back to work for financial reasons, and God has always blessed me to find another way. So
there you go.
I'm grateful.
There you go. And you don't necessarily, I indicated 30% of graduates, from college, but mm-hmm. you know who makes a lot of money? I mean, they can take care of their families, plumbers. What's wrong with being a plumber? If you don't want to go to college, be a plumber. I mean, these jobs are there. True. All right? You don't have to go to four-year college.
My fraternity brother, my line brother, actually, is mm-hmm. in his third year of his apprenticeship doing to be an electrician. And currently, right now, as a part of his apprenticeship, he is working on the Capital One building in Northern Virginia. He will make whatever kind of money, all kinds of money, because I don't have them skills, not at all.
Air conditioning and heating and all this kind of stuff.
HVAC is huge.
We need them. I got, you know, I don't even have. I mean, I look for black businesses because I need that service. If I can't find one, I'm gonna call whoever's available. If it's get cold at night, the heat go down. I mean, Michelle, you had some of your heat went down. Who'd you call? Before they even show up, they tell you, I want $178 just to show up, my friend.
Oh, yeah, it was $150 automatic on the spot. And it took 2 minutes to fix the damn thing.
This is Gene.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris. Gene. Yeah, Gene.
No. Yeah, one thing's for sure, you can't get a robot to replace a politician because we're already robots. So we ain't got to worry about that. and to speak to Ernest's point, my daughter is a graduate of Morgan State University. She graduated with a degree in sociology, and my son is 5 years her junior, and he was trying to live up to his older sister's reputation and her accomplishments. And I told him, I said, dude, you don't have to go to college for 4 years and be in debt. You can go to trade school for 1 year, and then that school will pay for itself in the first year that you're working as an apprentice. So right now he's in school. He started in January. He's in school to be an electrician. And I have a very good friend and frat brother that's a master electrician. So I put him on the phone with my son, and he told my son, once you reach the level of master electrician, that's the same thing as being a doctor or a lawyer. You have this official title. And when you start making $200,000-$400,000 a year, no one can tell you anything. Right. Yeah. I may look dirty, but I make $300,000. What's your life like?
There you go. And
yep. Absolutely.
That's for sure.
That is very true. So
electricians do make good money. My dad was a foreman, so my whole family's electricians. They are banking it in. So yeah, that's a great trade.
Okay. All right. Now we're pushing up against the clock. The first thing is I want to thank all the people that joined, and hopefully y'all guys were able to get some knowledge, gain something. There was a value to what you heard. We want to just thank all of you for joining. All right. We want you to follow. All right. And like and share. Yeah, I know I go through this drill all the time, folks, but you know, that's what we live on. We live on those little small details that sometimes I know y'all guys forget, but if you think that you get something from this show positive, then I need you to subscribe and share and like, please. All right. And I do want to thank all of you, you know, for joining us. And we're here every Friday at 6 p.m., Michelle and myself. And that's it. Hey, that's Walter, all I got. Yeah.
Hey, Walter, do you want to tease the listening audience with the guests we're going to have next Friday?
Go ahead. You got it. Please.
Next Friday, we're going to have Dr. Maurice Franklin, who is a Harlem legend, and he's running for district leader, male district leader in West Harlem, and he's running against the incomparable Charles Rangel. Yes, that Charles Rangel.
Oh, yes.
Former Congressman Charlie Rangel. Yeah, that Charles Rangel.
That's going to be awesome.
That's going to be a great one. So this is going to be where the panel asks them questions?
Yeah. Right? Is that the one?
Gene? This where the panel is going to participate with it? That's going to be awesome. Great.
Charlie Rangel.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Jeez.
Yeah, that's old school.
That made me stutter, man. I'm over here stuttering on that one. But folks, that's just an example. Gene just brought up an example of what we're going to be doing this year. We're going to have some awesome guests this year, and we need your support. We're not asking for money, but we do need you to, if you have Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars if you like the show. All right. If it shows no value to you, they're not going to understand that. Then you can send in, you know, let us know, you know, what we can do better. But let me turn it over to Michelle. And I am very excited about next week, Jane. Thank you so much, my friend.
Yeah, he just raised him up a notch over there. What's that about?
You see, he got
all excited, guys. You see that?
I'm not sleepy anymore.
You woke him up, man. You should have said that at the beginning of the show.
We got Walt back.
You got him back. Woke up the dead. Okay. Well, we're excited. We also have some wonderful guests coming on for Women's History Month. As well, for recorded shows, we have an opera singer coming in on Sunday to do a recording, and we'll post it. We also have some hip-hop legends that'll be joining us on the 19th. Old-school hip-hop young ladies that'll be joining us for Women's History Month. So we got a lot lined up, and like Walter said, we appreciate everyone's input. If you feel like we need to be discussing other topics, let us know. Hit us with a message. But right now you can follow us at on IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly. We are on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Pandora and other streaming platforms. Thank you all for joining The Walt Weekly Fridays Live. Thank you to our weekly panel, and thank you to our audience. Everyone, please have a safe and blessed weekend. Good night.
All right. Good night. Stay safe.
Night, everybody.